All right, so we have another episode of Inside Out where we learn about how people actually use our technology in the real world. We're with GigaSpaces today. You guys are doing some really interesting things in Azure with Java. So go ahead and introduce yourselves.
Okay, my name is Guy Collin. I'm the head of R&D in GigaSpaces.
My name is Itai. I work on implementing Java on Azure.
Excellent, so you're a developer.
Yeah. He's the lead architect of the Azure. He's a bit humble here.
All right, right on. That's good. So let's talk a little bit about what you guys have done. I mean, it sounds to me like you have opened up the Azure sort of platform for Java developers.
In fact, what we're doing is we're helping developer or IT to seamlessly deploy their Java application on Azure without any code changes. In fact, our target is to open the Azure platform for the Java developer in any stack, you know, like if they're using like web containers, big data, databases that are written in Java, Java developer like to use. Mm. And while keeping it all on the enterprise grade, because we are coming from the enterprise, so we know how to, at least we think we know how to treat enterprise application in the best way, how to give them the best service, the best SLA, while doing it in a scalable way, keeping low latency, and really utilizing the elasticity of the cloud.
Okay, excellent. And what kind of work did you guys have to do to get this to be possible?
Yeah, so there are a few things. Like the defaults that Azure comes with are, you know, optimized for .NET, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing we need to do is to change a few XML settings, and the next thing would be to help the Java application know where to write the files, you know, what kind of temporary file, what's the right folder, what is the memory of the virtual machine it's running in, because in Java, you need to explicitly specify how much memory it would use. Hmm. Unlike a .NET application, we just use, you know, how much there is available on the machine. So this, you know, there's a long list of checklists that we need to take and make sure that Java works perfectly on Azure.
Okay.
And I think on the high level, the other clouds provide like infrastructure as a service, while Azure is trying to provide platform as a service.
Mm-hmm.
So we needed to add some adaptations for that. We needed to add a way to deploy an application on a platform as a service. What we found out is that the worker role, I think, is the best match
because we don't want to take care of Windows update patches and, you know, make sure that the operating system is secure and all the load balancing stuff. Everything is provided by Azure. We just, you know, add the Java deployment and Java monitoring, and, you know, if you want to collect all your logs, all your JMX counters, all that kind of stuff.
Okay. So in some sense, like you sort of mentioned, you're a platform abstraction layer.
Exactly.
So. And people can plug into you. And you are doing this because you have a lot of customers who already have large J2EE code bases, for example.
Yeah, exactly.
And a bunch of Java developers, and they just want to be able to publish something to somewhere in the cloud and not worry that it's not going to work.
Exactly. We completely abstract the infrastructure as a service from the application in a way. In a sense, a guy can develop, or the developer can develop his application on premises without even thinking about which cloud he's going to deploy it later.
Mm-hmm.
And you can run it on his laptop using our emulator, and then later decide which cloud to use and deploy it on that. It's just a matter of a couple of lines in our what we call recipe.
Okay. Now, we're looking at your slide here, your Cloudify high-level architecture. Explain a little bit about what we're looking at. So you have this cloud driver.
Yeah, so basically this is the adapter for Azure.
Great.
And there are two ways to manage the application. There is the web user interface, and there is the console. So for .NET developers, they're probably familiar with PowerShell. So we're using a PowerShell-like console that is operating system
agnostic.
Mm. So we could run Linux or Windows. And then you need a controller that will decide how many instances of each Tomcat instance, web server instance you want. And maybe you want it to use some automatic thresholds.
Mm.
So this is where the controller comes in. And what happens is that we have also an agent that talks with the controller and streams on demand all the JAMEX. It's like for the developers, it's like performance counters, but it's a different standard in Java. It's called JAMEX.
Okay.
Okay. So basically, we will see a demo in a minute. You would see all these counters streamed into the web user interface.
Okay.
And then the point is that once you're on Azure, you can take advantage of all the Azure REST services, because the REST services, you know, it doesn't care if you're calling it from .NET or mm-hmm. Java. So if you like better SQL Azure, so you can replace your MySQL deployment with SQL Azure using a JDBC adapter, and so on and so forth.
Okay.
So in fact, you first you can deploy your application without any code changes, and then you can start utilize step by step Azure services if you want to utilize, if you think they are better, because they are more suitable for the cloud than just running a single database.
So I'm always a little, I think most people, especially developers, are usually a little skeptical when they hear things like, you don't have to make any code changes. So, I mean, in some sense, if I have, let's
perhaps
take...
I'll show you.
Okay.
Perhaps I'll show you the only code change that you need to do.
Okay.
And this is not a code change. You need to write this small part, snippet of code, which says, I'm using my application, is MySQL and JBoss, and my JBoss is dependent on MySQL, and that's it.
Okay.
The next thing you need to do is to deploy it on the cloud.
And that's it?
That's it. Unless you want to,
customize
things that we think that you don't need to customize usually on your first deployment. So you can play with the service and say, I don't know, I want two instances of my JBoss. I don't want only a single instance.
Okay.
I want you to present it with this icon on your monitoring, so you can control that if you really want to.
Interesting.
Again, you know, with .NET, usually you need to install an application, and then that's where it gets complicated. Usually, Java developers, the installation is just xcopy or unzip.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then you just run a batch file or a shell script if it's Linux. So the gap between, just taking any existing open source or Java application server and just installing it on Azure, it's pretty simple, as long as you're, with the defaults. Then we'll let you override the defaults, right? So if you want your web server to start on another port 8080, and then we automatically configure the Azure Load Balancer, as we'll show you, to expose your service on port 8080.
Excellent.
So we do all that, all that stuff for you.
Good. Now, I would just say, for ASP.NET, in terms of .NET, there's no installation. You just upload a DLL and a bunch of source files.
Yeah, that's the web role, right?
Yeah.
So the experience we want to give Java developers is the same experience.
Great. And it looks like you're doing that.
Yeah.
So let's talk quickly about performance. Now, whenever you abstract things away and sort of provide some sort of abstraction layer, there's got to be some sort of latency.
No, sorry.
But maybe not.
So we are not like another layer of virtualization. We are managing the process from without. In fact, we are managing the lifecycle by calling your own script, the script that you used on your own premises.
Mm-hmm.
So we are not really masking the infrastructure. We are just controlling it from behind, from the side.
Okay.
So we are calling your script and let it run on the bare-bone VM of Azure or something.
Sure.
Like that.
To run on the operating system.
Exactly.
Windows, Azure,
so we are
OS.
Not We're not, any virtualization
We're not part of the data pipe.
Got it. So let's continue and look at a sample. I want to see this.
Let's move to the demo.
What we see here is this is like our sample application, example application, where you can see streaming stock tickers into the application. And then we do some sample analytics. In this case, a sliding window averaging. And this is all done in memory. Mm-hmm. And
it's showing a real-time analytics application running on Azure.
Yeah, so this is like, if you like, real-time MapReduce running on a Java in-memory data grid.
Nice.
With big data at the backend.
Yeah, so, and then the next step is all the historical data is then copied to Cassandra in a consistent manner automatically.
Nice.
And everything is deployed on Azure. So, this is the Azure Management Console.
Okay.
Okay. So, each one of the roles. So each one of these is a role, and this is our role instances. Behind the scenes, they run each one their own virtual machine.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then, for our Java developers, we provide extra management features. I'll just show you. okay, so I just switch from the management application to the stock demo example, and let's see how Cassandra is doing. So if you want to explain.
So this is the full application running on Azure. It's a multi-layer application. You see there is the web application, the web layer, the business logic, the data grid, which is the real-time data, and the backend, which is the Cassandra, which holds all the big data.
Okay.
So you can run the analytics on the real-time data on our data grid, or you can run, like a big query on the big data. And this is all running on Azure.
As you can see,
it's a multi-instance layer. So you have like two instances here, two instances of Cassandra. We monitor in runtime Cassandra.
Mm-hmm.
And as you can see here, we give you like a nice dashboard showing the health of the application. You can cut it by the application. So you can see what's going on with the stock demo.
Great.
If you have more application, you can see the other applications. You can even drill down if you want per service and see what's going on there. You can go to the services, and then you can see that Cassandra has two instances.
Yeah, it gives you a comfortable feeling because you see the IP address, which you usually don't see in
mm-hmm.
Azure. You can see it brings you back and forth between the application abstraction and the virtual machine abstraction,
right.
Even though it's all running in Azure.
And you can even drill down to see the logs of the specific Cassandra instance and see what's going on there, to see how it's working.
Great.
You can even correlate between different services, so you can see what's going on in your application. If some layer is broken, you'll see like a very nice alert on that.
So now, you know, what part of Azure made this, you know, easy for you? Or, you know, I want to know more about your experience with, I mean, Windows Azure is essentially a cloud operating system as far as you're concerned.
Correct.
And in some sense, what was it like programming to Windows Azure, and what kind of work did you guys have to do to enable all this really super nifty performance stuff? I mean, this looked great.
Yeah.
It's really great to see.
I'm really proud of it.
So great job, guys.
Thanks.
I mean, it's very nice. So give me a little bit of that.
So most of the code that you see here is basically Java code.
Okay.
In this case, GWT. But when you want to run it on Azure, you need some kind of either a script or a .NET layer, which we preferred, that will help the Java understand Azure better. So for example, with .NET, I can access the failure zone that Azure started each instance. Okay, so for example, we want each Cassandra instance to be in a different failure zone. So I take this information through .NET API, and then I inject it back to the Cassandra instance, basically. So Cassandra could know that it needs that it has two instances in two different failure zones, and internally it needs to manage the data, right?
Mm.
So there's already, for example, a Cassandra plugin from other clouds, and this enables Cassandra to be more aware of Azure. So this is one example.
So now, in some sense, you guys are interoperating with the Fabric controller.
Yeah, we use the Fabric controller API from
exactly.
.NET.
Yes,
and we inject that as needed to the Java application.
And just so people understand out there, I mean, the reason that you have to, that you're doing sort of this interop with .NET, I mean, the Fabric controller is written in C#.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Right? It is .NET. That's really impressive. Now, who's using this in reality?
So
you have big customers? Is it working? Is it scaling?
So the original product for Vue.js, which we call XAP, which is Extreme Application Platform, is used all over with any name, a big enterprise, big finance is used.
Okay.
Most of the, in the top 400 are using it. Mm. This product is pretty new.
Mm.
We just released it like a month ago.
Yeah.
And we are releasing like a full-blown GA in a few weeks from now.
Nice.
But it's already been tested by huge enterprises, big integrator.
Mm-hmm.
And we're working closely with Microsoft on improving it and find where are the good, interaction.
Sure. And also, in some sense, I mean, the promise of the cloud is scalability.
Yeah.
So, you know, you must have been doing tests where I could be doing massive data analysis and I need more than two instances. I might need 100 instances or 100,000 instances.
Mm-hmm.
And I can do some serious parallel computation.
Yeah, usually you won't start 100,000.
Yeah, but,
Let's
look into the future, man. You never know.
Yeah,
but
that's where we're going. I mean, Java applications usually have internal clustering management.
Mm.
Okay, and so the most NoSQLs, either written in Java or not, are already scale out ready in that sense. So you just throw them more machines and they know what to do with the machines, as long as you have all this cloud metadata injected to them in the right way.
Nice.
Okay, so this is where we come in.
And since we know how to control the SLA, scale them out, mm-hmm. we can scale them out and give them the order to use this new infrastructure.
Now, you also mentioned sort of in your materials that I kind of looked through very briefly, that you have this notion of self-healing systems and your ability that your infrastructure will automatically manage, you know, everything that for me.
Exactly.
Let's talk about that.
Since Zap is used on finance institution and healthcare and e-commerce, mm-hmm. and it cannot suffer any data loss. So we needed to develop a system that can self-heal. So we took all this infrastructure and put it on Cloudify. So now you get the same infrastructure for Cloudify, meaning if we realize that part of the data grid, part of the big data, or part of, for your web application is lost for some reason, then we can automatically start a new instance and connect it to the application. Mm. We can even automatically configure all the rest of the parties, like the load balancer or the database, to be connected with this new, entity. Yeah.
And so is your application, your infrastructure, you've written it in Java?
Yeah.
All of it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Except for the, .NET interop parts. We have some .NET data interop. If you have an application that wants to write in .NET and then read it in Java, mm-hmm. or the other way around, or even C++, we can do it.
Mm. Excellent, yeah. Man. So you mentioned C++. What do you mean?
So, for example, if you need a really low latency application,
yeah.
and you write in C++, and then you want to read that from a Java web server, mm-hmm. you need some kind of interop, right? So either write it your own, or use some kind of messaging service, mm-hmm. or if you want, a more statically typed with query features like you would have in a database, mm-hmm. but much faster without losing all this latency, then you would use an in-memory data grid that has this interop capability.
Great. And if you want to blast over a huge data set really fast, C++ isn't a bad choice either.
Yeah.
And it's nice to see that you guys have more, a model where you can plug in different languages.
Exactly.
It's not just about Java.
No, it's not about Java. This is the big advantage that we add to Azure, because Azure is not meant for Java application. Mm-hmm. But we can manage.
And now it works.
Yeah. Well, I would argue that what Windows Azure was meant for is something that evolves over time.
Yeah,
it's always been a cloud operating system of a platform that. If you look at Windows that runs on the client, you write in whatever language you want. We don't care, right? It's not the cloud is the vendor lock in stuff, and the cloud it's just those days are doesn't make any sense.
And more so with Java applications, because Java abstracts away the operating system. So you could run the Java application on Linux, you could run Windows, and if the Hyper-V Windows Azure stack provides better performance, then why not?
Mm-hmm. And you could have a situation where your physical backend, your physical mesh, is a hybrid. You have some Linux servers, you have some Windows servers, you have some Unix servers, maybe, who knows?
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you want to get the most power. And this comes down to the on-premise thing, where this would also be really useful if I had my own cloud.
Exactly.
And I had a mishmash of hardware that I use.
Yeah.
It would, you could use a language, a virtual machine. In some sense, that's exactly what Java is. It runs inside of a virtual machine, right? JVM. So you can put that on various pieces of hardware. Anyway.
I think one of the biggest promises is the hybrid cloud. You can run most of the year on your on-premises and on, Black Friday, into the Azure.
You
can utilize the on-demand computing power.
Agreed.
And we provide it. This is part of our solution. And this is built in the product the way. Because we believe that when you burst to the cloud, if you do not duplicate the data to the cloud, then you earn nothing. Because if you need to go back to the data all the time, back to the...
Through the internet.
Exactly.
It will suffer great latencies and unknown SLA. So part of what we provide, we just bring part or all of your data when you cloud burst with the, burst. We just bring the data and the compute together from your data center to the cloud. and then you do whatever you need to do. Like, you wait a few days. Once the, you know, website traffic goes down, then just scale back.
Now, you know, of course, getting the data to the cloud is a physics problem. Yeah. And, you know, if I have a couple terabytes of data that I want to push up to this burst, it's going to take a fair amount of time, regardless of how big the pipe is.
Correct. Yeah, the data is partitioned. So
I don't think in this way partition is in this place the partition is the right answer. But okay. What we are recommending our customer, and again, we came from the data, we came from the application.
Sure.
Cloudify is our new offer. Mm. And most of our customers have multi-site solution, is that to synchronize the data all the time. And, you know, it might cost you some money, it might cost you some machines mm-hmm. that you not really utilize on Azure. But on demand, you can start the processing, which is the big chunk of machines.
Yeah.
And this way, using our platform, you can keep on the data synchronized on Azure all the time.
Great.
And burst whenever you want.
Exactly.
Perfect. Burst whenever you want. So this is great stuff, guys. Thanks for coming on C9.
Thank you very much.
Thank We're going to go ahead and get you a copy of Windows 7 before you leave here. I can't believe. I did some work on XP, so I'm proud to see it's still working. But right on, man.
We believe in the cloud. We don't believe in the laptop.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what the exactly. what's on the client, huh?
Yeah.
All right, great job, you
Thank
guys.
You
this is good
much.
Stuff.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.